Christy Tees podcast is brought to you with the support of the Royal Pavilion and Museums.
Hello, welcome to the fourth Christy Tees podcast in association with the Royal Pavilion and Museums. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Please leave nice comments and tell your friends about it if you're enjoying it. I'm in the final month of my residency here at the Royal Pavilion, and I've decided to continue this podcast even after the residency finishes, broadening it out. So I want to include stuff about my music world and other things, you know, any old cultural stuff I can think of. So please subscribe now. It's going to get very interesting as time goes on. I'll be doing a couple of podcasts on tour this autumn. Should be a fun time. This podcast episode is Brighton versus Jeff Koons. I invited three local luminaries of the art world, Sharcore, Sam Hewitt and Cara Courage, to come and have a look at the Jeff Koons exhibition and then sit in a room and argue about whether it's any good or not. Brilliant, it was really fun to take part in. I'm just going to run the conversation straight through. It's slightly longer than the previous podcast, but it's excellent. So I'm joined by artists Sharcore and Sam Hewitt and arts consultant and placemaker Cara Courage. You three are all very active locally, and you've just been wandering around upstairs looking at the Jeff Koons exhibition. What was your view of Jeff Koons' work prior to seeing the Brighton Museum exhibition?
I have never been that convinced by him, and I don't know if I am now, having coming out to see it. But also I'm really glad that I have seen it. When I was coming down, leaving my house today, come down, I was like, oh my god, I'm going to go and see a Jeff Koons exhibition in Brighton Museum, and that was something quite wonderful and quite exciting, actually.
I had seen a few works over the years and generally found them to be good, had a good experience. I don't know anything about him really, except those interactions with the work.
I've seen quite a lot of Jeff Koons' work, and I find it very provocative, but perhaps not in the ways he intended. So I'm particularly along with Cara and the idea that it's exciting to see Jeff Koons in Brighton. It's exciting to see any big name artist in Brighton. So we're excited that it's here, whether it's good work or not.
Can we move on to whether it's good work or not?
Yeah, definitely. Do you think it's good work?
No.
Okay, why not?
That's a very, very big question to say no to. I think it's a slightly disappointing sample of Koons, if I wanted to see.
So you think he's got stuff that's better that's not here?
He's certainly got stuff that's better that isn't here.
Why is it better than the stuff here?
Because it's a better expression of what I believe he's trying to do.
What do you believe he's trying to do?
You two are going to both have to answer the same thing. Carry on, I'm challenging.
I think he's done a lot of work. It touches on some interesting points in his work. I think having the vacuum cleaners is a good move because that's where he started. Mm. It misses out the period that really made his name, which was the Banality series with, you know, the Michael Jackson and Bubbles and the sort of super kitsch blown up objects. They put the posters of it from the show, which actually I think my favourite bits of this particular show are the posters relating to that Banality show. And then we've got this later post-Cicciolina phase where he becomes fascinated by childhood objects for reasons we can go into later. And he's done some other stuff. I'd like to have seen some objects from that Banality series. I'd like to see more of the Cicciolina stuff. Was it Made in Heaven, I think? Mm. But unfortunately he destroyed a lot of it, so you can't see that anymore.
So it's actually gone anyway? It's totally...
The story goes, he saw a picture of Cicciolina in a porn magazine and said, this is beautiful kitsch, this is exactly a place that I need to go, because sexuality is the moment when you're totally honest, and nudity is a thing that's used in high art. And actually, if you could combine those two things, you know, where is this edge? If I start dealing with porn, that's going to be kind of interesting. So he set up these initially photographs with Cicciolina, and then sculptures of him having sex with Cicciolina. He then married Cicciolina, then they had a kid, and then they had a very, very acrimonious breakup when he felt she was using the sculptural objects that he'd made in a pornographic context. And so she started using these objects, which he'd elevated to art and raised that question. Then when the divorce proceedings came out, it's like, oh no, he's just a pawnmonger. So he actually went to the point of destroying them to get through a tricky divorce. There's a lot of complexity there. You know, I agree with Cara and Sam, it's exciting to have it here.
Yeah.
And it's exciting to be able to come and see some Jeff Koons
but it's
and argue about it, but I don't think it's his best stuff. And in general, I don't particularly like where he's coming from. So, you know, it provokes some great arguments.
Sam? I really like where he's coming from. I love the found objects. I see the found objects and I go, oh, found objects. I don't need to see any more of these. I know what the experience is here. And I stand in front of them and I have a different experience that I hadn't had before. I hadn't really thought about the glass case stopping me getting at them and how that really felt, because it's my right to have these consumer objects and I'm being prevented. And I go, okay, there's a thing. And I catch a glimpse of some of the stuff written on the walls and it doesn't seem to relate to that experience that I had. So I make a decision at that point to read nothing. I'm going to read nothing in this show that he's written. I'm just going to visit the objects. And I'm wandering around and going, and the mirrors. And I go, it's a mirror and it's a shape and it's like a Rorschach blob that's encouraging me to invent what I think that shape represents. And it's reflecting me back at myself. And it's saying, what do you think it is? And so I form an idea. I go, oh, that's like a... And I can't do it. I can't remember what those images were because I then read the titles, which imposes his, I believe, bogus label to the work.
I disagree with that, because I think some of those mirror shapes... I really like the mirror series, but I think some of those mirror shapes are really obvious and some of them really aren't.
Mm.
So I don't think it's very consistent in that respect. The elephant is very obviously an elephant.
I didn't know it was an elephant.
Really?
Until I read
yeah,
it.
We
yeah.
thought it was a butterfly.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And one of them's a donkey that you think is something else. He calls
I wasn't
donkey,
sure what the donkey
really
was,
donkey.
And that's why I went back to see what that was.
Which is fantastic.
Because it reminded me of a kind of Snoopy shape. It was very cute to see whatever it was.
But you could go and buy it from Habitat to hang it on your wall.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That's probably one of the reasons why I liked it, because I thought, yeah, there's a lovely place where that could go.
Exactly.
Which is just naff, isn't it, for me to have that response?
No, I mean, I think it's absolutely valid response. And even though Sam and I disagree about the work, I love that it was able to give that reaction.
Yeah.
It doesn't do that for me. I find it disengaging. I find it obvious. And I mean, I know some of it's about banality and... Okay, I kind of get the point, but I don't think it's a very
yeah. I don't think it's elevated those found objects particularly. Actually, one thing, you know, I've seen found objects loads, but he was one of the first people that started doing this. He did this thing years ago, and I didn't get a sense of that kind of heritage from the captioning upstairs. That actually, a lot of people were following in his wake on doing this.
But
and
I mean, he's following Duchamp and Warhol,
yeah.
And I mean that's what I mean. That's part of why I don't like him, is I don't see a lot of originality, and I kind of like to see something new.
So what I find to be new and exciting is this dynamic between the written word and the presented artwork. It seems to be setting something up whereby he's deliberately misnaming things or deliberately misstating things to challenge me to ignore him or something.
Well, if you talk about it on those terms, it's whether the objects stand up as works of art on their own. The fact that they've
right.
produced that reaction in you means, from some perspective, it's a perfectly valid and perhaps a great work of art for you.
Mm.
I mean, that's... But you can't separate Jeff Koons from Jeff Koons, right? I can't look at his work without thinking about the fact that he was a bond dealer.
And this is why I think you're having a bad experience.
Undoubtedly. But, you know, we're contextual machines, and I have a different context from you.
I think it's why a lot of people have a bad experience of the work. Because he writes up on the wall, this is, I can't remember the exact words, but it's, this will change your life, or these are uplifting.
One of the quotes is he wants his work for people to enjoy life. People should be
and it's like
enjoying life because of this.
Up
and
yours, I can enjoy...
Yeah, that people should embrace everything. That was one of the quotes that I picked up on there.
How dare you say that to me?
So wait a minute, you're almost having this battle with the way he's described his work, not the work itself. To what extent do we know that the artist himself is responsible for that? For example, they've put some quotes really big on them.
Mm.
Or is that something that the Koons studio would have asked for? Or is that something that...
I mean, that's
part, a curatorial
thing. That's a curatorial
bit,
thing, and that's something which the museum here have done quite a lot, and other museums do too. But I know that that is a style of this museum here. So they would have chosen those quotes. That's
but looking at the style of the quotes, the first room, they sound like old statements. The middle room, they sound yeah. newer. And the last one is a very clearly a very new statement. It's
so
in
are,
terms
they
of
are,
if
they
you
do
follow
that sort of it's a little potted mini retrospective then.
And he says yes. nothing in any of them, which is exactly what he's about.
But what I'm saying is,
anyway, any artist could have said any of what
absolutely.
He said.
Absolutely,
I
can
well.
Write you a machine that
yeah.
will like churn those out, and that's part of what he does. If you see him speak, he has this brilliant, you know, kind of placid ocean of art.
You
know,
can't
write
a machine.
So he's a trope merchant.
Yeah, and he's very clear about it. I don't touch these objects. Like, those 200 people in the studio
yeah.
behind me just make the thing that I want.
Okay.
But absolutely, those statements and the work are representations of that artist, regardless of what
but
work
but
is done by other people.
How much choice he had about those words with these objects, I think
mm-hmm.
is Cara's point. That was a curatorial decision. I don't think Jeff Koons said, oh, I want that statement on the wall, please.
But I'd be interested
no.
to know the age of those statements then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm making an assumption based on my theory about deliberately disillusioning an audience.
So let's go with your theory for a second. Was it your reaction to the pieces themselves without those words that made it such a positive experience for you?
I felt I don't get talked to like this very often. Nobody tries to talk to me in these terms about the self and the illusion of the ego and reflecting that back to me with lots of dream imagery, and I felt flattered as an audience member and then utterly insulted by the written stuff. So for me, it's very clear he's got a dynamic going on between those two things, which is why when we came here again, I was very anxious to go and look at the written word on its own without looking at any of the work, and to try and analyse that and where he's coming from.
And did it make it stronger feeling?
It makes it stronger if that's true about how old those statements are.
You're listening to Chris T's podcast in association with the Royal Pavilion and Museums.
A funny thing happened to me this morning where none of us are allowed to photograph any of the pieces, but they let me photograph the quotes. So I can take the quotes that they've put up on the wall, photograph them and put them in my photo diary, but I can't do that with any of the actual art, which is what the photo diary is meant to be an account of.
I'll make you some out of plasticine. You can take
just have a little
yeah.
mini
yeah.
version.
So you're allowed to take photos of the words? Or was it one special dispensation?
It was just for me, and I had to be accompanied by one of the staff, and they checked through, and then one of the two old guys up there accompanied me and watched while I photographed two of the quotes. And then I regretted saying, oh, thanks, I'm done, because what I really wanted to photograph was the responses on this free expression wall of people's comments and jokes and silliness and...
A couple of things in that. One is, I do think there's a bit of a disparity between the work and how it is curated in that space. And you get to the last room and it's just suddenly kind of falls flat, really. Yeah, I thought that last room was really disappointing. It just didn't work for me.
It was
kind
a shame
of like
to have
they'd
the
kind
mirrors.
Of run out of space, and there was a huge wall space there that they could have...
But it's about that hanging object, right?
It
I mean,
is, but then I don't...
Really
I just.
Well, to give you a little bit of background that might throw some light on that, in terms of the caterpillar, they in fact rebuilt the ceiling in order to hang that caterpillar. So it's really interesting that if you're saying that it feels aesthetically like a little bit of a drop at the end, maybe they don't see that because they're so embedded in the process of getting the exhibition together.
Yeah, I would say in that case, and if that work is so important, then it should just be in the room on its own.
Mm.
And there should be no other distraction.
So they
should
have had the mirror there.
Yeah,
as well.
I think the mirrors, I'm done with the mirrors by the time I get there.
No, you've kind of seen that. And if that work is just so important, then let it just be in that room on its own. But then they have a limited amount of space here.
I don't like the fact that they're all different basketballs. But he's got a block of 20 the same and five of the
same.
I think Jeff Koons had an idea and sent someone to the shop, and he called back and said, like, can I only get 20 at this time? And he said, like, I need 25. I said, well, there's five of these other ones. I'll get those. We're going to put them in a box. And that's what happened. I don't think there's any significance.
And we'll make
and his later work is much more exacting. I think it's quite telling early on with these found objects. He did a lot of stuff with basketballs. My favourite one of his is the floating basketball. Have you seen that?
No.
He uses the Bernoulli effect where you blow a jet
yes.
fire and it just
yeah.
hovers.
Brilliant.
That's like a beautiful object. Look at this. Again, it's this unattainability, but at least it's in motion. It's doing what a basketball does. Whereas this putting them behind a box and lining them up just seems spiteful to me.
Desire.
Yeah,
right.
I think it's about desire, but it's just, I say it's not perfect enough.
And if you follow that desire through to the next room, what's going on? You've got the statue, and yeah. what was written about that is hilarious.
It is really, really funny.
That
isn't it?
Surely
is the statue of him.
No, the bust.
Yeah, the bust.
And
yeah.
the writing on that is a joke. It's a big fat joke.
But explain why.
Because it's aspiring to things which are going to put people's backs up. It seems to be just picking out the things that will annoy you and saying them.
It was comparing it to statues of ancient Greece and the status of the nude. And the pearls were meant to symbolise something yeah. as well,
some
weren't
sort
they?
Of goddess.
Yeah. In a way, that caption, it seemed a bit tawdry to me, I think. Yeah,
more than tawdry.
The written word again was really misleading
yeah.
and not what the piece was about. And what was I saying? Right, so this desire behind a case that's in the front, taking the idea of desire into that room and him showing you the bust and talking about this is what it's elevated to. Wouldn't you like to be elevated in that way or something is what it's saying.
He's creating a purity or an illusion of purity of his personal...
Yeah, which is kind of plastic.
Well, that's his thing. I mean, I think my favourite bit is in the other corner of that room with the posters celebrating his show, which he chose those kind of highly, in those days, airbrushed and pastiche kind of kitsch setups of himself looking beautiful and surrounded by women and crazy stuff. And he put them in separate art magazines as adverts for the show. And he chose the ones that would wind up that odd art audience the most. You know, I kind of like that mischievousness, and I think they're my favourite pieces. I think his incredible vanity and narcissism at that period when it was all about himself, it's all about sculptures of him, it's kind of the most revealing. And then he went out of his way to try and make the porn star a beautiful high art object. Funny thing to do when you're in that position. But the marriage collapses, and it's all turmoil for him. The art market crashed at the same time, and he was effectively almost washed up. So he started making kids' objects, and all these mirrors and the scaled-up dolls and stuff come out of the fact that his wife left with his kid, and he's like, the last time I saw him was at this birthday party, so I'm going to make a giant shiny hat.
Doesn't that make him a good artist?
No, it makes him a horrible cynical artist, because I don't believe that spin. He's run out of ideas.
Actually taking source material from his own ridiculously glitzy life.
But it's all about his own ridiculously glitzy life. It's like saying that Jade Goody was the greatest artist because look how horrific she was.
Okay, caterpillar, inflatable caterpillar hanging from a ceiling. You have to reinforce the ceiling in order to hang it.
It's absurd.
How heavy is that relationship he has to the child, whether it's his child or his inner child, whatever. How heavy must that be to have to reinforce
the ceiling? Heavy is his relationship with the art market that he knows he has to make the most absurd, expensive object he can to sell it?
It's a reasonable thing to say that he is expressing the weight of his own emotion.
If you saw that in an undergrad art show, you'd go, that's amazing. Look at the craftsmanship on that. That's
yeah,
an incredibly beautiful object. Isn't that fantastic? I want to meet the person who made it. Like, that's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not. It's Jeff Koons. He got it industrially cast at enormous expense. That object probably cost hundreds of thousands of pounds to make.
Why is it that what it is? Why is
no,
it
why is
it
the
is?
Question is that it doesn't make it great because it costs so much money. You could hang a real inflatable object there and you wouldn't look at it in the same way. You'd look at it because of this ridiculous artifice, this ridiculous machine
I think the reason why a lot of people would like that is because it does look just so like an inflatable, and then they realise how heavy it is and what it is. And I think there's that trickery which people would like.
It's very simple.
Yeah, I don't know whether people actually go past the enjoyment of that trickery. I don't know.
And to say why has he done this?
Well, is it a good enough trick?
Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
It's not a good enough trick, no. If it stops at the trick, forget it.
But weren't you really arguing about sincerity? Sam is saying he's sincere. Sharkle's saying he's not. Isn't that the fundamental?
You can't build your entire career on airbrushing pictures of yourself and making works about banality and then suddenly go, oh, I've had an epiphany, it's all about love.
Why can't you?
Because I don't buy it.
I put it to you that it was always all about love, and that at all points that's true in the work he's doing. And what he did was he found a way to express that was different and sculptural and massive and kitsch. And
producing works of art that you like.
Well, only eventually. I'm not saying that I was predisposed towards him, but I have only just understood the caterpillar. Do you know what I mean? It's taken me weeks.
Cara,
go one.
Is he sincere or not?
I don't know. There is something nagging in me that I'm just not convinced by him. I think his work is really fun. I think some of it, like the Michael Jackson piece, that just really darkly disturbs me. And I would have loved to have seen that here. It's not, but I mean, for me, that is a piece that I find probably the most provocative. But I'm not convinced by its sincerity. I'm not convinced necessarily of its importance. So much is said about how important this artist is. So many aggrandizing captions and comments and everything online is all so flattering and giving him such import. And yet I look at the work and go, really? And I don't see necessarily how the two match up. But that's not to say I necessarily dislike the work. There's this nagging thing, I'm not totally convinced.
It's very telling that he and Hurst are good mates, and Hurst was a big fan beforhand. Because for me it's about the machinery of the art market more than anything else. Look at how I can make these objects and make a lot of money out of it. I think once you've got to the point and you're selling your works for millions, very difficult to get out of that.
Well, here's my point, and it's about what the work means. And Damien Hirst is a good example, right? You will not get him to say what his work means. You will not. Did you hear him on Desert Island Discs?
Yeah.
Couldn't be done. And he won't do it because that's where the value lies. And if you spend millions of pounds to buy this work, you get in on the secret of what it means.
You know, you hand over your cheque for 20 million and you get a little card from Damien, go, actually, this is what it's about. Yeah. Don't tell anybody, though.
Don't you? It seems so obvious. When you work out what the shark is, what it means.
I don't have to buy it.
Surely it's not about meaning, it's about ownership. So the little card you get is a thing that says, you own this.
Yeah.
And no one else does.
And meaning doesn't matter. Right. You're in the club.
It's that poisonous arrogance that you get from being in that super wealthy circle, and it's exactly where Jeff Koons exists.
I think the sincerity the sincerity from Koons in this show is in the inception of the work, the ideas, and in the deliberate obfuscation of the language presented with it. That for me, those are the sincere bits, absurdly enough.
So that, those mixed together don't make sincerity.
They alienate people.
Yeah.
Which is what he wants to do, because he doesn't want anyone to know him.
I'm finding that quite a compelling argument, actually, for his sincerity. So if you've spent all your life doing art a certain way, and then you get your heart broken and your life destroyed, not destroyed, but your life becomes a lot more difficult and unhappy, and then you try and address it in your art, you're still going to present the art the same way. And if you've got 100 million quid to spend, you're still going to get your crew to create this beautiful thing. You're not going to suddenly whittle away at a piece of wood. You're going to use all the practice that you built up and the resource that you built up. It's the subject matter that's sincere, not the process. So yes, you made the point that he has all these resources to make this very heavy looking inflated caterpillar, but he can't unhave those resources.
You could become a paintbrush.
Well, I suppose, but he can't paint. He never did paint.
Well, maybe you should go to the studio and whittle it out himself. I don't know. I don't want to get sucked into that whole you know, production line thing, but he is very much a ideas merchant.
Is there an innocent till proven guilty thing about sincerity in the arts? Do we have a duty to assume artists are sincere until we're really convinced they're not? Or does it not matter?
I don't think the audience has a duty to be a certain type of audience. When I go and see a piece of work, I don't think I have a duty to the artist, to that piece of work. I have a duty to myself in that experience.
Yeah.
That's as far as any kind of duty, I think, goes.
And it's really a case of, because you know the backstory, does it make his production of childlike works better, more honest? I walked in with the weight of my knowledge of Jeff Koons in my back, and already, as you say, having an opinion of it, and remaining unmoved by these particular objects.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the giant puppy made of flowers is a genius.
Oh, I think that's my favourite piece of his. And I think,
I'd love to have seen that in the Pavilion Gardens. But,
yeah.
You know.
And it's like, that's the giant puppy is, you met a guy years ago and he was great and he was really happy and together, and now you've met him again and he's a bit broken, so you're kind of backing off. You don't want to give him the same
thing. No. I think he's someone who has lots of ideas, lots of money, who talks beautifully about nothing, and occasionally has a good idea.
Right. I think there's a tremendous consistency to the work here, apart from the bears. It's the one that I can't fathom.
They were the caption to that beautifully said that it was about taking that everyday object and elevating it through that fine craftsmanship to fine art.
Yes.
I went, really? Does it?
He's deliberately kind of annoying you, don't you think? With that,
no, I think the caption maker was deliberately annoying.
That would have not come through the Coombs Foundation, that caption, right?
It's a huge, huge issue. What's written? Who writes it? The Tate is going to take away their captions.
Is there an issue with this exhibition and the captioning is major?
The Bieber exhibition I loved because there's a real connection to Brighton. The clothes were fantastic and it was just brilliant. That, though, for me is quite a classic. That's a museum exhibition, and I expect in a museum exhibition to have all sorts of different levels of interaction with it, and for the captioning for that to be really quite sophisticated, which it was, and it really worked, it was great. This, though, this to me is more of an art gallery exhibition, yet with some kind of level of museum captioning, so maybe that is what isn't working.
Well, it's conceptual art, it's about the concept, so what you write next to that concept is also part of that concept. Surely, you know, because the work itself isn't in the craftsmanship, it isn't in the you know, the story, it's in the idea.
Are you suggesting that if it had no captions, say it had only titles, just as minimal interaction, would you think people would get more or less out of that?
I think they'd get a lot more.
See, I'm not sure. I think people need a bit of guidance.
We make art, we write the stuff that goes with it. Isn't that the thing?
No, because you know, in certain processes, when you sell the work and it's actually part of a collection, then the ownership is with the collection, and it'll depend on what agreement they have with the Coombs Foundation about exactly what they have to get signed off.
If I own a piece of art by you guys and I loan it to a collection, you might not even know about that.
No. Oh, okay. I'm going to go home and write a really, really abstracting, alienated, insincere caption to the piece of yours that I've got.
Wouldn't it be amazing to go around and recaption? Oh,
that could be, I mean, yeah, that could be a really, really political act, particularly as it is such a contentious issue in galleries at the moment.
Yeah.
About, the whole captioning and interpretation of works is huge.
How's this removal of captioning going to happen? Are they still going to have the title?
They will have to have the title and the artist and the date, and if it is loaned by somebody, you always have to say that. I think the idea was to get rid of the explanatory text, so you're not presenting it in any other context other than this is on the wall here in front of you.
And I think you have to do that in a time when international art English is going up its own, can I say, sphincter?
So art speak, it's in trouble, is it?
Well, I think that's a function.
I think it's become such a cliche that even the people who peddle cliches are having difficulty with it. And you find this real conflict between public desire people in the arts and say, oh, I just want the artist to tell me what they're doing, I want them to be honest. But if you say, here's a lovely picture of some sunflowers and hand it to your gallerist, they're going to go, no, I can't put that next to your painting, can you tell me about that, where it came from, and use more art English, and so it's a sort of self-fulfilling cycle.
Are they going to know who did it now? Is that the point, when we put the caption?
No, because he's going to cut it out of the podcast.
Okay.
No idea. Do you like that there are higher profile, bigger things in that space, or did you prefer it when it was kind of slightly more small scale?
I think their increase in ambition is to be lauded for a provincial museum gallery, because that's essentially what we are. We're not London, so we're in the provinces, we're against London like that. And there are so few spaces to show work in this city. I think it's great that they actually are going down a kind of contemporary art route and bringing in more challenging work and more ambitious work, because we need it. We haven't got much wall space in this city, and if they're going to open that up, absolutely.
Are you saying if they're going to do that, we need to rally to it and sort of?
Maybe actually, in a way, yeah. But you know, this is quite a new thing for Brighton in this space, so maybe there's need to be a little bit of sort of two-way education here between them, educating audience, getting the audience ramped up for this kind of work.
The audience for this show is going to be people like ourselves who know about it and want to go and see it and are excited by the opportunity to see Coombs. There'll be people who want something to do on a rainy Wednesday afternoon and come into the museum.
I saw when we were there was a tour group going around of foreign students. And what I assume was the teacher talking to them about the work. And I was like, I really want to listen.
Yeah.
I can't speak the language, but I want to kind of hear what someone else is saying so that I could join in or something like that. basically.
Mm. I don't think this exhibition is suddenly going to mean that everybody in Brighton is suddenly really turned on by contemporary art and comes to every show.
Mm. I've got one note actually about this Queen's exhibition I forgot, which is it's fantastic to have it next to that gallery of women artists. It's really nice to walk out of the Coombs and then walk into that of entirely female artists. That was really exciting. I spent almost as much time looking at that as I did at the Coombs. In fact, dipped in and out of the two just for the contrast. Because they're so dramatically different things. He's so hyper male. It was really refreshing to see a bunch of, you know, I don't like the idea that all artists should be grouped based on gender, but in the context of Coombs, it's really nice to see a bunch of women artists.
Raises a really interesting point, which is that this organisation is very female led. The Royal Pavilion and Museum.
It's just the arts.
Is,
that's the arts generally.
Women run the arts.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well,
up to a point.
Up to a point. You'll still see a lot of CEOs are white privileged men, but the ranks of the, you know, the people at the forefront of the arts day to day is it's women. There was one thing which I wanted to say about this, or pose a question about this exhibition, and that was its relevance to Brighton, as it kept on saying in the captions and in the blurb. I've got it written down. Brighton is a city of extravagance and transgression. Therefore, it's fitting that this show should be in Brighton, because Brighton, they're both of extravagance and transgression. And I just wondered whether that was stretching a point.
Yes.
If they were to say to me, this is about kitsch and about hedonism, then I go, perfect, Brighton, absolutely.
Do you think they don't apply to Brighton, but they do apply to the art?
I think they are words that applied to the art, and I think they've been words which have then been placed in the place of Brighton.
Just to come back to Coombs before we wrap this up, one of the things that annoys me about him is that the exciting ideas, the found object stuff, the repetition, you know, Duchamp and Warhol did it very well, but they're dead, right? They're like the Beatles and the Stones, they're kind of gone, well, apart from the Stones. But now what you've got is Jeff Koons, who's like bloody Oasis, right? Oh, let's just continue churning those ideas that have been done in the 30s and in the 60s.
So he's not even Blur.
He's
not,
not even Blur.
Winners, is he?
He's almost BDI. I'd
say. Oh, God.
All right, okay, can I counter? Can I counter what he just said? This is a man operating at the top of his game, right? Talking about how he feels to be alive in the world. And these are his expressions of that in a gallery where we live, right? It's a privilege to see work like that. I think it
doesn't make it any good. It's a privilege to see it.
The thing I'm saying makes it good because it's somebody communicating to me via the medium of art something very sophisticated and moving.
Which and he successfully communicated with you and didn't with me.
That's brilliant. Thank you. thanks so much for taking part.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
You can find links to items discussed in this podcast by going to rawpavilionandmuseums.tumblr.com. For more information on Chris TT and links to his writing in residence at the Raw Pavilion and Museums, please visit christt.com. This is a Wine Cellar production.